Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to good morning and welcome to Continuing for Truth Radio. This is Saturday Symposium with Dan Wilson. We're going to have common sense on today. And
I remember a teacher that I had. Now I went through the seventh grade. I went to the seventh grade. I left home when I was 10 years old because I was hungry. And I used to. I work in the summer and I go to school in the winter. But I had this one teacher. He was the principal of the Harrison School in Vincennes, Indiana. To me, this was the greatest teacher, a real sage of my time, anyhow. He had such wisdom. And we were all reciting the Pledge of Allegiance one day. And he walked over, this little teacher. Mr. Laswell was his name. Mr. Laswell. He says, he says, I've been listening to you boys and girls recite the Pledge of Allegiance all semester, and it seems as though it's becoming monotonous to you. If I may I recite it and try to explain to you the meaning of each word? I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge. Dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity. Allegiance, my love and my devotion to the flag, our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom. Wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United. That means that we have all come together. States. Individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose. All divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose. And that's love for country. And to the Republic. Republic, a state in which sovereign power is invested in representatives chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people, and it's from the people to the leaders, not from the leaders to the people, for which it stands. One nation, meaning so blessed by God, indivisible, incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation, and justice, the principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others, for all, which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance, under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer, and that would be eliminated from schools too?
Taking us back a little bit. You know, that's what it's always about. We want to welcome you this morning to Saturday Symposium. Dan and I are going to have some good discussion this morning. We have a special guest this morning. You know, this guy's been running around for a long, long time, but recently he's been laying pretty low. You know, the left tends to call him a lot of names. They call him all kinds of horrendous names. He goes against the left's philosophy that Anything goes. Anything goes. You know, what you feel and what you think and what you do is anything goes. But I drug him out. I looked for him. I couldn't find him on Twitter. I couldn't find him on Facebook. I looked everywhere, but I found him. And his name's Common Sense. And we're going to talk about some common sense this morning. You know, I always say it, and I'm going to say it again, go back to the creation. Always go back to the creation. There's a reason why the Bible starts there. There's a reason why the Gospel of John starts there when it applies to religious matters and faith. When it comes to politics, you know, most of the left's their foundation, one of their feet rests upon the fact that there is their belief and a fact. They think that there is no God, and that this creation, not only the earth, but the universe as well, the planets and the solar system and things that they said a long time ago they thought were true. He got the probes out there and found out they were way wrong. And evolution doesn't work out in the universe, and evolution doesn't work here on this earth. But there's a lot of things that the left uses that for, that basic concept. They use that to push climate change. They don't care too much about really the creation itself. It's an excuse. But go back to the creation. Always go back to the creation, because you can look at the creation and know there's a creator. Now, we can discuss and argue all day long who that creator is. That's another discussion, and I believe we can prove that as well. But when you look at the creation, there's a creator. And you know that because there's certain things that just don't make sense with 40 billion years. You know, which came first? And I can't wait till the next time I have a discussion with somebody that believes in 40 billion year evolution. Which came first? DNA? Because that's in every living thing. That's in all the plants. That's in all of the animals. I mean, that's a constant. You know, in math, we use a K. For a constant, and what that means is it's the same every time. It's the same every time, and every living thing, including mold, everything from mold to the human being, has DNA in it. Did DNA come first? Exactly how did that DNA, you know, they always start with chemicals and this and that, but, you know, really, the DNA had to come before even the cell. There's other things. You know, the eyes amaze me. Because you've got two eyes, and most living creatures have two eyes. And what those two eyes do is they work together to create two pictures that when they're put together in your complex, complex brain, it makes it a 3D picture that you see so that you can navigate and so that you have depth perception. You know, where did that come along? You know, 40 billion years ago, you just had no cells, and they're just starting to come together. How did that just kind of slowly over time come together? You can look at the distance we are from the sun. You know, we're the perfect distance from the sun. If we were a little bit further away, we'd freeze. If we were a little bit closer. And, you know, that's a long ways out there. That's a long ways out there. So that means we're put right on that edge. We're put right in the center of exactly where we need to be. You know, and I could do this all day, Dan. You know that. You could too. Looking at different things in the creation, the trees, the way the leaves take the sunlight from the air, the energy from the sun, and in the leaf, they gather up the water from the ground and the nutrients and the roots, and it comes up together and it goes into the leaf, and the leaf creates food for the plant. And then the plant makes flowers, and the flowers turn into some kind of a fruit, whether we eat it or not, turns into a fruit, and in the fruit are the seeds. And you know those seeds, they just fall back to the ground, they die, they separate themselves from the life source, they die, they get buried, and they resurrect into a new tree. And how did that process? I understand, you know, how maybe two inanimate objects might come together and form something that moves. You know, if that was all it was, you know, then maybe we can have an argue back and forth, but we're not talking about that. We are talking about trees and grass and bushes and animals and man and ecosystems. entire ecosystems that have been put together, and our atmosphere, and the way the water and the clouds work together to produce rain, to bring water on the ground that doesn't have water right next to it. All these things are complex, and all these things prove that there's some kind of architect behind it that had to be built. It couldn't just happen by accident, starting with two little pieces of matter of some kind coming together and beginning to become alive. You know, a question that's never asked of the evolutionists, and I don't ever understand why. You know, you can say that let's just say that two pieces of matter came together at some point and started this layered process that over long periods of time eventually grew into what we got. Well, when did it first split from plants to animals? You know, they'll give you a chart and show you it started with this critter and it turned into all these things we got now. But at the same time, this matter over here that just accidentally was coming together also turned into plants. And when did the grass turn into trees? And when did the trees turn into bushes? And you know, when did their relatives turn into the orange tree? Boy, they don't ever give you one of those charts for the plants. See, this is common sense stuff that we're going to talk about this morning. This is common sense stuff. Because I can take, and once I have an understanding that there definitely has to be a creator, I better start looking. Because if he's big enough to create this whole thing, then there's got to be some purpose behind it. And that takes us off into another discussion. We'll discuss that Friday morning at John and Betty's house as we sit around at Ladies Bible Class. Some of that's what we discussed this last Friday. You can find that archive here on Contending for Truth Radio. But then we can see certain things in the creation that apply to man. We see things like branching out, and we see things like regrowth and different things, common sense. And then when we look at society and we look at how man interacts, I believe the best place to find out about that is in the Old Testament, and that story between Genesis and Esther. Read those. I want to encourage every listener, get your Bible out and read the story. It's just a story. It's a long miniseries, and it's better than anything Hollywood ever thought about doing. There's nothing like it. Read through it. But as we read through that and we look at society, we see there's some common sense things about society. We know that if you give too much to somebody, then they lose a character deficit on the other side. You know, and I use this illustration often. 100 years ago, children got one gift at Christmas. Maybe. And they cherished that gift. And they had it for years and years and years, and they took care of it. Today we live in a society where the Christmas, you know, half the living room is filled with Christmas presents. And I love that. I'm not saying anything against that because I'm a big contributor. Let me tell you, I get my nieces something every year, and then I go down to the dollar store, and I also buy a whole bunch of other little stuff I can wrap up, and so we can have a great big pile. And it's all gone in a couple of days. But we know that as the more we have, the less we appreciate what we've got. That's a basic foundational principle. That's not right. That's not left. That's not anything you can argue with. It's a basic foundational principle. And it applies to marriage and the sexual relationship between a man and a woman. And if you want to have a real loving lifelong relationship, there's some ways to achieve that. There's some common sense ways to achieve that. But society, they don't preach those things. They teach you other things. You know, there was a couple of things this week, Dan, that really got me. One of them is they're having a nude week at Brown University. Back there, I forget which state, Brown University. And after I opened up the article, I tried to put it out of my mind. But the purpose was to show that as normal. And it's insane. It is absolutely insane. If they want to live that way, you know, Dan, if they want to live that way, that's part of the world. That man has been that way since day one. I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with that. If they want to live that way, they're not going to have a content life. I know that. They're going to have a lot of heartache. They're not going to know how to jump their hurdles. They're not going to want to jump their hurdles. They're going to cry in front of their hurdles. They can live out in the world's way and do things that way. But the left wants me to view what they do as okay. And they're not happy until they stop. That's common sense. That's why they call us racist. That's why they call us bigots. That's why they call us, you know, I have a racist bone in my body. But I've been called a racist because I disagree with that methodology. I disagree with that side of politics because it doesn't apply to common sense. It doesn't apply. And we're going to look at common sense this morning, and Dan and I are going to talk about things, and we're going to pass our conversation back and forth and have a good time. But, you know, this is the crux. We talk about basics. We talk about principles. They're all based in common sense. There's just some basic common sense things. The tax code is an illustration of a common sense principle. When you have anything that is any kind of a legislative document, a law, anything of that sort, and it's 5,000 pages long, they do that on purpose. They do that so that nobody can read it, and it's got so much in it that they can get stuff in there that would not normally go standing by itself. That's a basic common sense principle. That's not right. That's not left. That's why those huge pieces of legislation like our tax code and Obamacare and a whole plethora of things, it's common sense. When we first started, and Dan and I know, Dan, we're going to go to the Founding Fathers. When they put together that Constitution, man, I can put it in my back pocket behind my wallet. And it was powerful. When I sold World Book Encyclopedia in the 90s, we had a phrase, little things make a big difference. Little things make a big difference. What that basically means is when you go back to the basics and you go back to the things that nobody ever discusses, that's just a part of it. No, it's the whole. It's the foundation. So, Dan, I'm going to pass it to you for a while to rant. But, you know, you saw common sense more on the world stage than I have in my lifetime. I've been very fortunate. I was raised in a good common sense home. We used common sense. It was a good, loving home. I never had a fear, ever. As I watched my friends, moms and dads divorcing, I never had a fear of that. I always just knew, even as a young child, that just wasn't going to happen. My mom and dad made it very clear that they would fight through fire to make sure their marriage worked, whatever it took, because they were going to be old together. And, you know, I was fortunate. I was raised in that situation. But as far as the world goes, and in most of my adult lifetime, I have seen a huge deficit of common sense. I've seen the common sense hiding. But you were around in an earlier time. You were around when Red Skelton was saying those things, and he wasn't being called a racist. People were agreeing with him. The bulk of the people would have agreed with Red Skelton when he said that at the time. But it's not so today. And so I'm going to pass it to you and let you carry on that conversation further. Dan, it's good to have the show back this morning. We've had a couple of weeks where it's been crazy, but we're back.
Yeah, I'm happy to be back. And, you know, I agree exactly with you when you're talking about how things work in a circular form, and that it had to have some, there had to be some entity to put this all together, to make this whole system work. And I see it as a group of circles, you know, be it mankind, plants, or whatever. As a group of circles. And even Stephen Hawkins, a person who says he doesn't believe in God, proved that the Big Bang does this too, is that it will expand to some point and then it'll all come back to the beginning. And that's just the biggest of the circles that we know of. But if you look at mankind, you know, the mistakes we've made, the trials and tribulations over the years, they are things that we repeat over and over and over again. And each time we say, oh, the society has changed too much for that to happen again. And what do? The same thing. And we're in one of those circles right now. You know, from the time a man is born onto this earth, we know that he will grow, live, die, and then he'll decompose and return back to the earth, at which point his remnants will be used to grow something, to grow new life. And, you know, this is with everything. You know, a tree grows, he falls, he rots, he falls into the ground, gets mixed up with other nutrients, and up comes more trees, and that, you know, supply food for beetles, and everything's interconnected, and everything's a bunch of little circles that, you know, they have their own little secular thing that keeps on going on, and it goes, you know, it's throughout the earth. Now, was this just some mistake, some toss of the dice? You know, you have to believe in a higher power. I mean, it's the only thing that makes any sense. I mean, even if you go down to, you know, they say how life began on this earth. You know, some people are saying it came in from stardust and got mixed up in the pile when the earth started cooling and the volcanoes went up and caused these chemicals to get together, and I guess they shook hands and whatever. It doesn't, you know, you have to have something above that to make this all happen. And, you know, to say we just popped into existence is, to me, kind of naive. So, you know, I look at it going, God created this whole system for us to kind of unwind and figure out. You know, his whole idea was by teaching mankind to learn all these complex systems that eventually our minds will mature enough to the point where we can see things close to equal with him. But man overall has to evolve on its own. He's not going to just give the knowledge and the power out of the blue, because when you're given, it's a proven fact, if you give too much power to a society that doesn't understand it, they abuse that power. And when that power is abused is when you have some serious, serious problems. So I look at our Earth as this is just part of the learning process that God is putting us through. And we're gonna make our mistakes. We're going to scrape our knees. Hopefully not too bad, but if we do it too bad, that's God's will, and maybe he'll want to clean the slate and start all over again. I don't know. That's not for me to know. But what I do know is that, you know, when I look back, I'm a creature of history and science, the two. You know, we've talked about my father. Well, my father's been on this show, and there's that scientific part of me that says, you know, there's always an answer, and there's always a solution. But you have to approach any particular problem objectively instead of subjectively. And this is a word, these are two words that people, they'll tell you, oh, I know what those two mean. No, they don't. Subjective reasoning is a lot more difficult than people realize. See, subjective people go in with a preconceived notion, saying that, well, I think it's this. And that automatically skews your outcome. Objective means you're coming in this totally neutral. I don't know if it's to the left or to the right. And then the person who comes into it and starts reasoning in an objective fashion comes up with the true answer. See, the subjective person will look for things that will support his belief. The objective person doesn't have a side or a belief. So he will look for what makes sense. And then the objective person will come up with the true solution. But the problem is that, especially with our left, is they're subjective. They go into it, they automatically have the answer before they've done the research. And being the son of a professor, I have seen PhDs do this. They come in with a preconceived notion, especially when they're writing a thesis, and they will do everything they can to prove their point. And this is what they did with the global warming. They ignored the information on the other side that said, no, this doesn't work like this. And that's one of the problems of the world today. We're very subjective. I would say less than 1% of the population can truly say they are objective. I mean, it's a very difficult thing to do, especially, you know, when you come in and say, well, I know it's this. So what I did personally is when I said, oh, I know it's on the left or whatever, excuse me, I looked at it from the other point, the other side, to try to get a objective conclusion. And it's not an easy thing to do. But the left refuses to do that. And what happens, we end up with problems. And this is, you know, this global warming crap, their economic theories, And as the head attorney general in the state of Florida was yelling at the sheriff of Lakeland, he said, Rome is burning and she's still fiddling away. That's what happens. It's like, you know, take a look at Detroit. that Rome already burnt there. And, you know, you look at the other 20 bottom cities in this country, and Rome is burning, and they're fiddling away. Oh, it's somebody else's fault. It's, you know, it's the Bush's fault. It's Reagan's fault. It's, you know, anybody but themselves. Instead of taking two steps back and taking an objective look at what the problem is, they stay so subjective that they refuse to even acknowledge that there is a possibility of another answer. So they keep on their way, and it keeps on going down until you crash. Detroit is where this country, if we don't change our path, if you want to see what our country will look like in 100 years, take a look at Detroit. They don't understand. They think that taxing is the answer. They don't understand that by taking every tax dollar that you take out, you are removing $1 from the economy. The definition of an economy, of a healthy economy, is where money is moving, is circulating throughout the system. Yet they don't understand that. So they think by taxing, it's going to be the solution. And what taxing is doing, it's actually putting the brakes on the economy. And you put the brakes on so far, you know, as people are being taxed more, they're going to be spending less. And we call that disposable income. When the person decides to spend less because he's nervous about the economy, even less money is moving throughout the economy. What does that mean? That means less disposable products, such as TVs and other products, are sold. And when that happens, companies lay off people. And as the government taxes the companies more, they even in times of recovery, they can't afford to add on people because they are paying the taxes. It's a vicious circle. And see, the left doesn't understand that. And that, you know, it's the more you keep on doing this, eventually the money runs out. And what happens? The economy crashes. And I will argue with any economist on that. You know, a person to listen to, a great economist who really broke things down to its simplest forms, was a man by the name of Milton Friedman. And I recommend highly that you listen to some of his tapes on YouTube. He can explain why these systems keep on breaking down, as you know, we just went, what I just went through. And this works kind of, these are just common sense things. You don't feed the plant water, what happens? The plant shrivels up and it dies. You know, you don't, if you don't feed a person, what happens? It can't die. If you think that, you know, remember back in the days of George Washington, you know, they believed in bloodletting. Well, they kept on taking the blood out, which is, we could switch the blood and put that to money, eventually he ran out of blood. And where's George Washington? He's dead. Well, you take, you know, the money out of the economy, what happens? It dies. This is not rocket science. But this is a side the other side doesn't see or refuses to see. And what we have to do is, you know, try to educate. And but the problem is, how can you educate a person who does not want to be educated? This is the hardest part. You know, you can't teach the blind to see. I mean, it's something that I, you know, Kay Carl is coming up with a good idea, and I'm hoping it's going to work. And we also have to realize that we got to get away from the petty stuff. You know, we're worrying about whether or not the tablecloth is straight while the Titanic is sinking. I mean, these topics of, you know, gay marriage and abortion and everything like that, yeah, they are important within themselves. But the problem is, if the ship is sunk, you aren't going to have any problems. You know, so what we got to do is prioritize. And the first priority is to straighten out the system, the entire system. And how do we do that? We go back to where our forefathers started. We go back to a few people that we heard of called Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, Madison, and on and on. And listen to what they had to say. Listen to, you know, that little document that Adams and Jefferson put together called the Constitution. Listen to the Declaration of Independence. Read it. And then think how many, what these people gave and sacrificed for this country to evolve. And then go to the Federalist Papers, which breaks down every word of the Constitution and gives the arguments for it. And then we can start rebuilding. And with that, I'll pass it back over to you, Scott.
Well, amen, Ben. And, you know, you started somewhere that I really liked, because I think you're spot on. And that's that this creation is circular. I've always said that there should be a word called secular. There isn't. I don't know if we ever use it. If you look it up, it's not in the dictionary. I looked it up one time because I just didn't think. And there isn't. They're circular, but it's secular. Starts with the basic. The Earth rotates around the sun in a circle. Not only that, we find things that are very circular in time, like you said. You know that if we go back to that Old Testament, the point of the Book of Judges is a circle. And that circle is that the people of God, the Israelites, everything would be going good. They'd have God in their knowledge. They were going all right. And then what they would do is when things were going good, they'd kind of tend to forget God. And as they tended to forget God, things started to fall apart. They quit remembering Egypt. That's the way to go through the whole thing. Remember Egypt. And he comes around, and pretty soon things are going pretty bad. So they call, and they say, we need you again. And God sends them a redeemer of some kind, a judge. And then the judge tries to bring them back to a concept of, remember, this is the God that brought you out of Egypt. And then things start going good again, and then they end up in a bad situation. And you go from good years to bad years, good years to bad years, throughout the pattern of the judges. We know that nations go in cycles. We've seen nations rise. We've seen nations fall. You actually said, Rome's burning. And if you don't understand that, listener, get on the Internet and look up Rome and Nero Caesar. He was abominable. He was very, very destructive, and he was a bad man. And Rome burned while Nero fiddled around and fiddled some more, you know? And things go in circular motion. Things repeat themselves. Patterns repeat themselves. We just discussed the pattern of the tree, and it goes in a circular motion. Those new seeds are going to grow into new trees, and those new trees are going to make more leaves and flowers and fruit and seeds, and those seeds are going to go back into the ground, and they go around. I watched a really good documentary, and it was pretty unbiased. I was pretty impressed. That it was about the redwoods, the coastal redwoods. Now, if this mountain was not in my way, I got a probably about a 500-foot hill that sits across the valley from me here, right here. But if it wasn't in the way, I'd be able to see the redwoods from my front porch. But it sits in my way. And those redwoods here, you know, I go up there quite often, and I stand underneath them, and they are so huge. And some of them are upwards towards 2,000 years old, and they go 400 feet in the air, and they're incredible. But this was on the coastal redwoods, which are basically the same tree, but they grow along a range over on the California coast. And it was fascinating to see how those trees work, how they get that water from the ground up to those leaves way up there at the top of the tree so that it can mix together with the energy of the sun and create food for the tree. We find that a lot of the water that they get actually comes from the fog. We watch those things grow, and we watch the little seedlings and the little trees underneath that are coming up. Those ones have been there the longest. But there's all kinds of little redwoods around, and they just keep growing. It's a very fast-growing tree. I'm a firm believer in when you go back to the creation, start with the tree. Start with the tree, because the tree will tell you a whole lot. You know, Dan, about 3 weeks ago, I saw a video, and I posted it on Facebook. And all you have to do is search YouTube for Our Created Solar System, and it's almost a two-hour-long video. Be ready to sit down and watch it. It's Spike Saris. He was an engineer in the United States Military Space Program, and he entered that program as an atheist and an evolutionist, and he left it as a creationist and a Christian. And I'm going to talk about a couple of people here because I'm going to be working on trying to get them together on the show. Spike, I'm going to tell you, I've never seen any better done video that proves, disproves evolution. And the story is, and I mentioned this casually earlier, but the story is, for years they not only decided what was going on evolutionary here on the Earth, they also had to have that happening as the universe was expanding from nothing into what it is right now. And that was all great. That was all wonderful. You know, Darwin and all those guys during his time frame, they come up with these ideas, and they were looking through telescopes. It cracks me up, Dan. They're looking through telescopes still today, for the most part. We've got a few probes, but they're basically coming together with the whole way the whole thing was created, looking through a little tiny telescope, a little tiny man on this little tiny planet in this huge solar system that's in this huge universe. Well, come to find out that over the last, few decades, one of the things we've really enjoyed is these pictures, close-up of some of the planets in our solar system. And these probes we've sent out into space to prove that, you know, it was, of course, all evolution. And we come to find out that none of the planets exist. They don't exist. They're not there. They're gone. It's been our imagination this whole time, because every single planet totally fails under the system of evolution. Totally fails. I mean, some basic things, like all of the planets going around the sun rotate in one direction except for the last two, and they rotate on their side. So you got these solar system that's, if you imagine it, a ball in the middle and a bunch of wheels going around it on the ground, and they're going around and around and around and around and around. And on the edge, the last two planets, they're not rolling on the ground. They're rolling on the side. How did that all come together under the basic physical concept? And you and I, Dan, can understand the concept of some things coming into a gravitational pull and coming and being pulled into a circle. We can understand that concept. We can see that picture. I don't believe it can happen over billions of years, but we can see that picture. But that's not the picture that they found when they got out there. And that's the picture they painted from evolution, that all of these things would be all spinning in the same direction because they were either thrown off or so on and so forth. They came over billions of years. These last two planets out there totally mess all that up. And there's a lot of different things. I mean, I'm telling you, it's almost 2 hours long. It's thing after thing after thing that we've found out from over the decades of these probes going out and things about the moons and many of the moons don't even exist. They don't fit in evolution's plan of how the universe was created. We don't talk about that very often. When we talk about evolution, we generally talk about animals. I think we need to talk more about plants, and I think we need to talk more about the solar system, because these things prove, and it's all circular. It's all circular. We're going to try, and I'm going to try and see if I can put a time together, and we'll take the full 3 hours to do this, Dan. And I'd like to get Spike on the show, as well as a friend of mine, Brad Harab. If you've ever heard of him, he's a PhD. He lives back east. I'm trying. He's like in Texas or Oklahoma or Arkansas. I always forget which one he is back there. But Brad is a scientist, and Brad is a Christian, and Brad has spent his lifetime examining evolution here on this earth under living things and the planet, and he can go, I've heard him on a number of occasions in person, just talk for 45 minutes and just leave you wandering, you know. Your mind is just racing because he understands some of these things about evolution that the creation doesn't fit in. You see, over the last few decades, not only have we learned things about the universe, we've learned more about the creation. And there's certain things that just don't fit. It doesn't fit into evolution's plan. One of those things is DNA. I mean, either had to come first. This had to be an Earth with little DNAs running around it. Had to be. Because otherwise, you don't have any connection between plant and animal. You don't have any connection between plant and animal, and they both have DNA. So all living matter had to start out with DNA. And that DNA, it had to be running around here. Did it have legs, Dan? Did it have legs? Did the little DNAs have eyes? Because they're in every living thing still to this day. So if it's an evolutionary process, they had to be there at the beginning. Common sense, folks. Brad's a good guy. He's very, very smart and very, very intelligent. And I think it'd be a great show, Dan, to do in the future where we have both of them come on and discuss those two sides of this. The plant life, the animal life, and the creation here on Earth, and how that doesn't fit into the evolutionary process and where all their flaws are. And have Spike as well discussing with the universe and the planet. You know, if you want to, Brad's got a book. It's called Convicted. A scientist examines the evidence for Christianity, and it's incredible. You can go to focuspress.org and order it. Or you can go there and read some of his work. I would encourage every one of our listeners, go to focuspress.org and check out his stuff. And he's got some friends that do this with him. They've got some there's some great informational stuff there. It's awesome. And then, of course, Spike, he's got a website as well, and it's got a whole bunch of information about it. And if you go to creationastronomy.com, creationastronomy.com, and you can get copies of his DVDs. I would suggest that I'm going to order, as soon as I get a chance, I'm going to order and keep that DVD myself. It's something that I really can use as I teach Old Testament history. But I would encourage everybody to support these two guys. They've got the common sense. If you go back, even when you're, you know, when I'm talking politics, somebody talks to me and they say, well, Scott, what do you think about the welfare system? And I say, well, first thing we got to do is go back to the creation. And sometimes they look at me like I'm crazy, and they go, no, because if we both stand on the same spot on the creation, and I think we can if we look at some common sense, then we know where we're coming at the issue of welfare, because it starts there, and there's some basic concepts that begin there. And I've had some people look at me crazy. But I think one of the keys, Dan, you know, we talk a lot of politics. And we talk about, you know, we had Jonathan Barbee on last Tuesday night, incredible man. I want to encourage everybody, while we're handing out websites, go to Barbee, BarbeePSC.com. He's running for public service commissioner in Alabama, and he's just a good guy. He's a real good guy, a friend, and he's a hard worker, and he understands. And, you know, we support these guys like Jonathan because we understand that there is a need for common sense. There's a need for common sense. And when we put the whole thing together, when we put the whole picture together, I know that Jonathan and I stand on the same wavelength, and we haven't discussed all the issues. In fact, there's a bulk of the issues we've never discussed. We've never even talked about them. But I know where he stands, because I know where he stands on the basics. I know that he starts out with the common sense, that you can't look at the creation and not see that there is a creator of some kind out there. And to believe what the other side believes about the origins of this earth and life, once you start there, once you start that there is no higher power, once you start that man is smart, is the smartest creature there is, and what he knows is law and gospel, until you get to the point where you are humbled a little bit to look at circumstances, you will never get there. So check those two guys out. You mentioned Kay Caro also, Frederick Douglass Republicans, Frederick Douglass Republican .com. Go check out Kay Caro. Learn a little bit about Frederick Douglass. We mention him a lot because, man, he was a hurdle jumper, and he had a faith, and he started out as a little boy, a slave, watching his aunt be beat and his mother taken away from him, and she died when he was six, and he became one of the wealthiest men in the country. Had the ear of the president, of more than one president, wrote great books. He was a businessman. He went a long way. And I believe Frederick Douglass went a long way because he used a lot of common sense. And so take some time, our listeners, and go to those websites and check them out. We're not getting paid. And in fact, they don't even know we're standing here talking about their websites. We're not advertising. We're encouraging to go check these guys out and help support them, help get their message out. The more we get the message out, especially the basic message, the more we defeat the left. Climate change, all falls apart under the concept of a creator. It totally falls apart under the concept of a creator. Socialism, they'll try and tell you Christ was a socialist. Christ wasn't a socialist. He wasn't 5 seconds worth of a socialist. But I'll tell you what, some of these common sense things that Christ said, and they apply right down to our religion. It all comes together, you know. You know, Dad, we're getting towards the top of the hour, and we're going to have to close it out. I've got to head down the hill. But, hey, you know, we both said some things. That really, they're the foundation of the matter. They're the foundation of everything we look at. And one of the big things that you said was about Detroit. And we're not really good at human beings at looking at cause and effect. We have a hard time with it. We have a real hard time today because we're being told, and instead of looking for ourselves, we're a mentality of people that just listen to what we're told and just take if it's, we think that's a good source, we just believe it instead of looking for ourselves. But Detroit, Alabama District 7, down where Jennifer Montrose lives and Jonathan and all of those guys, they're examples of us. What happens when you try and micromanage everything? When you try and eliminate all hassles, you know, occasionally, out of all the guns out there, millions and millions of guns, occasionally, some are used for crime. Some are used for crime. And I'm a firm believer in finding some real common sense ways of helping you curb that. I would start with the government encouraging people to make strong families. That would help. That would help more than anything in the whole wide world. You know, if the President of the United States got up there and said, we need to make strong families. If we'll make strong families in another generation, we'll have less crime to worry about. And that would be common sense because we know that when you've got a strong family structure and you've got love, you're raised in love, and you're raised in with some common sense values. I mean, you're not raised in an atmosphere of anything goes, ends justify the means. But when you're raised in a situation where life is good and you're happy and you're content because you've got some basic understandings, we know that those kind of people are not the kind of people that end up most of the time going out and committing crimes. Not always. Some of the best raised kids have gone way far off. We know that happens from time to time, but the statistics are on the other side. The bulk is on the other side. All common sense. Dan, I'm going to pass it back to you for a couple of minutes of concluding remarks, and then we will hand it back, and I don't think it was enough that Red Skelton gave the Pledge of Allegiance just once. I think he needs to give it again. And everybody search out, look for a flag and say that Pledge of Allegiance with him. You know, I know we're not in school, but it's important because we love this great nation. We really do. We don't want to see her go down. She's provided freedom, and she's provided opportunity, and she's provided greatness, and she's made the world better. And she's a great country. Dan, I'm going to pass it back to you for closing remarks, and then I'll let you pass it to Red Skelton.
Okay. I agree with you on Red. What a wonderful man, and the wisdom that was spoken in that. I can't listen to it enough. We're talking today about circular and how the two planets that didn't revolve the same way. It's funny, though, when Stephen Hawking was talking about the Big Bang, when he got to the center where this allegedly all started, he said all physics breaks down. And that should tell you something right there, is that there has to be creator. When you're talking about where even the scientists are saying where it began, physics doesn't exist anymore. Science doesn't exist. It's so far beyond us. That should tell you something. That should tell you that there is a creator. And I want to pass it over to one of my heroes. And Red Skelton was a great, great man, along with other people of his generation, Bob Hope and Bing Crosby and all these people were great patriots, and we need that to return to our country, and if we listen to some words of wisdom from men like Red Scout and take that to our heart, this country will be a much better place. And take it on, Red.
I remember a teacher that I had. Now, I went through the seventh grade. I went to the seventh grade. I left home when I was 10 years old because I was hungry. I work in the summer and I go to school in the winter. But I had this one teacher. It was the principal of the Harrison School in Vincennes, Indiana. To me, this was the greatest teacher, a real sage of my time, anyhow. He had such wisdom. And we were all reciting the Pledge of Allegiance one day. And he walked over, this little old teacher, Mr. Lasswell was his name. Mr. Lasswell, he says, he says, I've been listening to you boys and girls recite the Pledge of Allegiance all semester, and it seems as though it's becoming monotonous to you. If I may I recite it and try to explain to you the meaning of each word? I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge, dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity. Allegiance, my love and my devotion to the flag, our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom, wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United. That means that we have all come together. States. Individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose. All divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose, and that's love for country. And to the Republic, Republic, a state in which sovereign power is invested in representatives chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people, and it's from the people to the leaders, not from the leaders to the people. For which it stands. One nation, meaning so blessed by God, indivisible, incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation, and justice. The principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others. For all. For all. Which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance, under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer? And that would be eliminated from schools, too.